is June 7th, 2016. You're looking live at Athens, Georgia. This is episode 6.1 of the Willich Experience podcast on sports on Earth. I am the aforementioned Willich. I thank you for spending part of your day with me. Thank you for playing around with me the last couple of weeks with Noah Davis previewing the Copa America Centenario, which had a very miserable USA loss. But they're going to win tonight. Screw off Costa Rica. And then, of course, talking with Ezra Edelman. Mostly you could hear him. I thought I was doing a great job of recording that podcast. And if you listen to it, you can hear me. But I sound like I'm on the opposite side of room as Ezra shouting questions from him from far away. In fact, we were sitting right across a table from one another. Regardless, hope you enjoyed that podcast. And make sure to watch OJ Made in America on Saturday night, June 11th at 8. Sure, whatever time. Check a DVR. It's easy to find. Anyway, the movie's really terrific. It airs in 5 nights all over next week, so make sure to watch that. But we are back on our regular baseball podcast this week with my old friend, your friend of mine, Allison Futter. Glad to have her back. She, of course, is the national correspondent for MLB.com. Follow her on Twitter at Allison Futter, AllisonFooter. And, of course, make sure to give us a nice review on iTunes if you could. It makes it easier for people to find the podcast. This is episode 6.1, by the way. I do the naming convention off 64 episodes in one season, which means we just finished episode 564. So this is episode 6.1, which, and you remember, I used to do the trivia. I don't do the trivia anymore. Those did not actually count as individual episodes, which means, if you can believe it, I know you don't even remember any of them, but we have done almost 350 of these podcasts. Sports on Earth is 4 years old in like a month. So, yeah, time flies. Anyway, we're not going to talk about that with Allison this week, but I'm sure we'll talk about that with me later on future podcasts. Anyway, here's Allison. Have a good one. Allison, we're back. How's it going? I've missed you. Everything okay? Everything good? Nothing massive happened? Everything's still going well for you since I've talked to you about the baseball and this baseball world? Is all happy?
Guess so. Sure. I can't remember the last time I saw you.
It's been a couple weeks because I had to preview the Copa America with Noah Davis, and then I had to talk to Ezra Edelman, which, by the way, I hope you watch. You should watch it on June 11th, the ESPN OJ documentary. It's big stuff. So I had to talk to him on the podcast last week, but it was all just a distraction from talking to you. So you're well. You're good.
Everything is good. Yes, I appreciate you checking on me. I can't think of anything catastrophic that has happened. So it's all good.
All right. Well, good. Well, if there was something catastrophic that happened, I wouldn't force you to relay it on this podcast anyway. That'd be a bit much. All right. So let's talk about some of the stuff that's going on. There are three main things I think going on. It's actually kind of it's not a particularly crazy time. I think things have settled a little bit. Since I've talked to you, that like 13-year-old pitcher for the Dodgers thrown a little bit, which was a little weird. But there's been some unsettling, but I think the two main things that are going on right now, three if we count the draft, and you and I will have to we'll talk about the draft when we get to that. I feel like the first thing we can start, I think the AL Central is actually really fascinating right now. I was preening a little bit there for a while, feeling pretty awesome with my preseason pick of the Chicago White Sox. They, of course, have not completely fallen apart, but they're definitely not in first place anymore. They are now only one game over 500 as we chat, as the crow flies, three games behind the Cleveland Indians. Meanwhile, the Kansas City Royals, a team that everyone was writing off for dead after all these injuries, and they've had some serious injuries, were in first place for a while. They've lost four in a row, and then coming up, leading it all off, is Cleveland. Cleveland, in the midst of everything collapsing with their basketball team, has taken over first place in the Central. Meanwhile, Detroit's still kind of hanging around there at 500. What do you think of the Central? Is this just a little blip? Is this the way the standings are going to fall? What have you kind of thought looking over the division?
Yeah, I mean, I was a little bit surprised when I was doing our power rankings last night, and there's some divisions that I pay more attention to than others just like during the week, because there's just more interesting storylines kind of going on elsewhere. But I was looking at the AL Central. I was like, oh my goodness. I did not realize that the White Sox were in the middle of like a 5-18 stretch.
Yeah, it's falling apart.
Yeah. I mean, I knew that they had stumbled a little bit. Maybe, you know, I call it coming back to earth, because there's some teams that got off to such hot starts. And it was like, you know, a start that lasted like 6-7 weeks. That's not like a small little nothing of a sampling. But sustaining over, you know, the course of the entire season. I mean, you know, I was skeptical of the White Sox before the season started, and then I was starting to think, well, maybe Will knew what he was talking about.
He didn't. He
The one
didn't.
thing
He
that
had
I
no
never
idea.
really truly believed in was Matt Latos.
Yeah.
So the fact that he has definitely, I mean, I can't say he has nosedived. Actually, I think his last outing was okay, but he certainly has evened things out a little bit from how he started, which was like practically being unhittable, which was ridiculous. That wasn't going to continue. But you know, nothing surprises me with the Royals. You know, even when they were really scuffling and they were getting banged up, I'm like, you just can't ever count them out. I figured the Tigers, you know, in spite of themselves, just do have too many good players to completely fall apart. Even though I don't believe that they're going to be on top and this whole thing is over. And what we talked about when before the season started was the Indians starting rotation, right? Which
Yeah.
is what largely things are predicated on, is like how good your starting rotation is. They have good starting pitching. The end. So that's kind of cool. I'm glad to see that. I'm glad to see that they're sort of surprising people. I was very shocked when I looked yesterday. I'm like, oh my God, the Indians are in first place.
Yeah. And
That's
like game and a half. Like they're actually up a little bit.
yeah. No, they just had who did they just swept somebody.
It'd be
Who
the
they just
Royals. They swept the
okay, the
Royals.
Royals, right? So you know, that's no small thing, and you can't like judge an entire season on what happens in early June, but there are a lot of things that were going on over the weekend. I was like, well, that's pretty interesting. I mean, we'll get to the AL West, but the fact that the Rangers swept the Mariners, I mean, you know, teams are start to eventually play to what their actual abilities are. And I'm speaking of the local team here in Houston as well. So I just think the last couple of weeks have been fascinating all over baseball.
Yeah, it's worth noting that just how kind of prominent the reason I kind of wanted to start with, because we're going to talk about the AL West after this. One of the reasons I wanted to start kind of talking with these two divisions was last weekend was such a big deal in both, and particularly in the Central. You had Cleveland sweeping the Royals, and then you had Detroit sweeping the White Sox. And so, you know, that really changed the way that worked now, right now. And again, some people may not hear this till Tuesday, so you know, maybe who knows what's happened since then. But at the time we speak, Cleveland's won 5 in a row, Kansas City's lost 4 in a row, Detroit's won 3 in a row, the White Sox have lost 3 in a row. So we can talk about getting back to normal in a lot of ways, but this is still like, you know, if we talked 4 days before now, it's been 3 weeks since we talked. If we had talked 4 days ago, we might be saying something a little bit different about this division. But certainly, the one thing I feel like the two teams I kind of want to focus on a little bit are Cleveland and the White Sox. Kansas City, you know, we'll see about them. They bounce back a little bit after all those injuries, but you know, it's so hard to predict them. In Detroit, who knows with what's going on with them? But I feel like the White Sox and Cleveland are interesting. White Sox first because they traded for James Shields. It's amazing how much time, you know, I think you and I have talked about James Shields on this podcast like 4 or 5
Right.
different times in 4 or 5 different realms, whether he's the stud starter, whether they were going to regret that trade, the trade that ultimately got them Wade Davis. You know, I think that there's been these long discussions about James Shields for a long time. It's kind of weird how the whole James Shields saga is ending with him maybe being a fourth starter for the White Sox, is actually how this is going to turn out. So they clearly think they're in if they're making that kind of trade. But you know, we spent the last 2 years. Yeah, we joked before last year. I think Sports Illustrated, I think Jonah Carey from the late Grantland, both picked Cleveland to win the World Series last year, and they kind of flopped again. And here they are. You know, you look at the Baseball Prospectus playoff odds. I know I'm obsessed about this more than most people, but the biggest favorite in all of baseball to win the division is obviously the Cubs. The second biggest favorite right now to win their division are the Cleveland Indians. They are at 83.3% to make, excuse me, to make the playoffs anyway, and to win the division, they've given them a 70% chance. A lot of people have been saying for a long time Cleveland actually does have the best talent in this division. It kind of looks like they're actually kind of maybe this is the turn to where they finally start showing that.
Yeah, I just, like I said, I mean, when it comes to pitching, that's what they have. They've always been that team. I mean, yes, because you just mentioned that people have like picked them to win the World Series. So they've been like this team that's been around for a while, and it doesn't like remind me completely of the Royals of like 4 years ago, when everyone's like, you're supposed to be good by now, and you're still terrible, and what is going on? And then all of a sudden, we saw what happened. So I don't really equate it to that so much, but you do have like a pretty solid foundation, a good core, and like this manager who's really good, has been very effective in the past, and is very well regarded and very well regarded among his team, among the players. And so you do sort of feel like, you know, are the Indians always going to be a team that kind of beats themselves, or they just aren't quite able to get over that hump? I mean, I'm just looking at like all of the pitching, and I mean, you know, I'm mildly I'm mostly impressed with the bullpen. The Indians as a whole, like, they don't overwhelm me with this like crazy talent. But at the same time, in a division that's kind of pedestrian, as we talked about, it was probably, what do we call it, like the most boring
The most
division.
equal is that because remember before we realized how awful Minnesota was, we thought
Right.
this could all be like a 5-team division. Now it looks like a 4-team race, which is also not so bad.
No, it's not, and that's fine. And it's funny. I was talking to a. We're doing an interview with one of the Twins broadcasters, and he said this looks like one of the most evenly spread divisions. That like it could literally go down to the end with all five teams being in it. I think we know which team is not going to be in it. But you know, I do like the fact that the Indians are not. They're. It's going to take me a little more to like convince me that they're actually like for real. But at the same time, I do feel like they're supposed to be doing this already. Like, what's taking so long? Like, this is actually supposed to be happening, and good for them. I like the Indians.
So moving forward, if I were to ask you, and I would never, people always use the gun to the head construction, but if I were to put a gun to someone's head and ask them to make the tradition, I would go to jail. I mean, it always feels like there's other ways. Like if I say, okay, you're going to be fired, or we're going to be, th we have to jump off a cliff together, or so on. But hand to paper, mouth to microphone. Where, if you had to make a prediction, who's going to win this division? Who do you think it's going to be?
The Royals.
You think the Royals, still in the Royals. Awesome.
I'm sorry. I can't, I mean, until they don't, like, I don't know. I've seen so much of them. I realize that, like, we're all waiting for the slow erosion to start. Everyone knows what's going to happen in another year with free agency. Everybody knows what's coming. The Royals front office is, like, bracing themselves for it. I get it. But until, I'm sorry, until they just totally fall on their faces, I'm not picking somebody else to win it above them, because I've just seen them do too many ridiculous things in a good way, to do things that they were not expected to do. You don't win two pennants in a row, and then, you know, by not actually ha being for real, in every facet. And even when you have, you know, they've got some like truly bad injuries, like things from, you know, key guys, but that they still have a good farm system, and I'm not picking anybody else until they show me they're not very good.
Fair enough, fair enough. If I had not picked the White Sox before the season, I have to stick with them, obviously, because I picked them before the year. But
You don't have to stick with it. You can just
if I were dropped, if I were dropped from the sky right now, and had a parachute, and landed and said, okay, and they're in the middle of this, who's gonna win? I'd probably have to pick Cleveland. That team, this that looks like they're coming around a little bit. Danny Salazar's been as good as any of their pitchers right now. I feel like they look to me like the team, particularly because they can make a trade for a bat. It brings back to that general kind of worry about Cleveland, the kind of sadness about Cleveland is, their attendance, man. Like that, it's fun. Can you believe that Cleveland was the team that had the highest sellout streak in a row for? Because now, like I've only been to that same twice, and it was a consecutive days, and there were like maybe 2,000 people in that stadium.
It still blows my mind. And the reason being because I was not only in Ohio through the majority of that streak, but I was in Canton, Ohio, working for their double-A team right in the heart of that streak. And our attendance spiked because you couldn't get into Indians games, so people came down to Canton to watch the players that were eventually going to play for the Indians. It was very cool.
There's been a
And
theory that that was because of the Browns being out of town, but and also of course the Indians being good. Do you
no,
think
the Indians.
that's repeatable, or like is there something, this area better than I do? Is this something that can they turn this around? Is it just the matter the team hasn't been good? Because they've been pretty good the last couple of years. Not great, but they're still it hasn't helped their attendance.
No, it hasn't. I mean, I think that they're just going to have to get back to winning, being in the playoffs and sustaining and being. They're not bad fans there. And
Okay.
they're certainly, I mean, there's such like loyal sports fans. We hear a lot. I mean, we just saw a documentary on it, and I get it. Like, oh, the poor Cleveland fans, they never can, you know, win the championship, and poor downtrodden Cleveland. I don't think the Cleveland people actually feel that way about their city and the people that live there. And there's a lot of redeeming qualities to the city. And I'm not from there. I mean, half my family is from there, but I don't have like, it's, I'm not saying this from like, hey, I grew up there and you offend me. But I think that the outside perception of what Cleveland actually is extremely, you know, that's what people do. They go to the city and they're like, oh, oh, this terrible city. And oh, I don't like this. And I don't. And actually, people have like, they're quite proud of being from Cleveland, and they do like their sports teams. And I do think that there's a lot of people that still care about the Indians. They have to get them back in the stadium. It's still a very nice stadium. And so there's some out of like the areas around, like during the 90s when they were selling out at all those games. They had the flats that were like booming. Nightlife was like off the charts around there. And that has since gone away. So they do have some work to do, but I do not think that they would stay away if they, you know, persistently were in the playoffs. I think they'll come back.
Yeah, I like that stadium a lot as well. And I actually like the city of Cleveland quite a bit as well. Yeah. So I am pro. You would think from a national perspective that people are all just doing the sad Charlie Brown walk down the street all the time. And that's not what's happening.
Yeah, and it's so many of it is the writers. You know, they go in there briefly to cover whatever series they're there to cover. And, you know, it's a total cop-out. Like, some of the columnists will, like, bash a city because they don't have anything else to say, which is just, you know, a total, like, smash on their character or whatever. But you can't go into a city for 3 days anywhere. I don't care, anywhere. And make a judgment on, you know, way of life, you know, how – just, like, what it's like to live there. You know, I've always, like – I'm kind of known in my circles as like not liking Florida, but I live there like 7.5 weeks out of every year, you know, for spring training. So I think like I can make, you know, I can make opinions about living in Central Florida, and it kind of stinks. But you know, when you go into a city just a couple times, you can't make judgments. Cleveland has a lot of, you know, a lot of good points about it.
The only exception to the rule of you can only spend 3 days, you can't just spend 3 days in the city and understand its values and the people who live there, is Las Vegas, of course. all right, so let's speaking of which, segue, let's go west. Let's talk about the AL West. Right now, it looked like people were starting to leave Houston for dead a little bit. They've come back around. They're only two games under 500 right now. But to me, and we'll talk about Houston a little bit, but to me, the story in this division is Texas. Texas has completely taken off. They are 12 games over 500. They currently have the best record in the American League and the second best record in baseball. That kind of happened out of nowhere after a weekend sweep over the team that we had been so excited about, Seattle. We'll talk about Houston in a second, but you know, Texas, obviously, they are kind of putting it together. They've got Darvish back. The office is kind of coming around. Is this the team? I think a lot of people have been very excited about Seattle. I think Seattle's a baseball town that people would like to see really get going again. I think they have the longest non-playoff streak now. People would love to see them get going. But when you look at Texas, is this the best team in this division? What are they doing right? What do they got in the water over there in Arlington?
Yeah, no, I mean, it is the best team in the division. The last couple of weeks, I've been, even when the Mariners were still clinging to that top spot, I was like, this could end soon. I like the Mariners a lot. I think that they are a little bit more inconsistent in their rotation. And I just don't think that the Rangers are going to have as many like stumbles throughout the course of the season because of their rotation. Getting Yu Darvish back is huge, obviously. I mean, you can't even like, I don't know that you can properly like assign a number to how like valuable that is to have, you know, to like reacquire, you know, a Cy Young caliber guy like right in the middle of your season without having to like spend any more money or give up anybody to get him is like huge. And then they've got other guys like at the bottom of the rotation and the middle of the rotation who have just been
Colby Lewis has been awesome.
Derek Holland has been better. And they've just infused like young players, you know, offensively, like into their lineup. I mean, they just have that. It's such a cliche, but they have that right, perfect combination of veterans and the young guys. And it works. And it wasn't like they're coming off of a season where they had to do too much. I mean, they won the division last year. And so they have a really good thing going there. And what they're doing is beating the teams that they need to beat to get to the finish line there. And that's where some of the other teams in the division are starting to fail a little bit.
Yeah, and it's worth looking at. You know, they have, like, Prince Fielder is having a horrible year.
Yeah.
Valentin Shields has been hurt. Yeah. Shinsu Chu has been hurt. Drew Stubbs, Robertson Trinos. You know, they have, and like even Odor, Mitch Moreland has not been playing well at all, and they're still 12 games above 500. I have to say, they have kind of some big holes in the lap. Their second best hitter this year, and on a consistent basis, has probably been Ian Desmond, the guy that just kind of tossed it out of nowhere. Noma Mazzara has been amazing. You know, this looks like a team that has a bunch of young players about to completely take over. Even Jerks and Profar, like the guy's 23 years old. We'd almost have like written him off. He's been great in the 10 games since he's been there. I think the Rangers maybe I think you're right. I like the Mariners. I picked them before the year, but there's a little part of me that thinks Texas, particularly once they kind of iron out those lineup inefficiencies and don't have to give at-bats to fielder anymore and kind of settle that down, they look like if they're at this level with Darvish back in only two starts, I mean, they're 12 games over 500. That's a pretty good place to be. But I feel like we'll see that a lot. We'll get a really good idea from where they stand this week in Texas at home because they're playing the Astros, who have gotten really hot. They've won three in a row. They've certainly righted the ship a little bit. They're no longer in last place. That's the rightful owners of Oakland and Anaheim after that. Are you up? You know, obviously Houston pretty well. Are you up on them? Is this moving in the right direction or is this just kind of a dead cat bounce?
Well, it's moving in the right direction because this is just, it's been a very bizarre few days because I left the ballpark yesterday saying this team has won 11 of 13 and I just covered a closer losing his job.
Right.
Which is mind boggling that they have all these like really great setup guys and they can't really nail anybody down who can pitch the ninth. So they're pitching, they're on a very dangerous pace with this bullpen. They're playing all these extra inning games and they're winning them. But the point being that they are blowing late leads. They should not be playing these extra inning games. And so I, you know, through the first 7 weeks, I was like, wow, this is a team that's playing horribly. It's not a horrible team. And I predicted they're going to get it together somehow. They're not going to make the playoffs. They're going to win 83-ish win games, you know, and just narrowly miss the playoffs by five games. And I still feel like that's happening. But they have too many good players for the season to completely fall apart in them. What they have is, like, way too many strikeouts in the lineup, just way too many of, like, the same kind of hitter. And if you don't have your, you know, core three or four guys – that are going to carry that lineup, then there's really nobody else to sort of take over. I don't see the rotation, and I've been saying this for a while, I don't see the rotation as like a championship caliber rotation. That's a rotation that you have when you're like wanting to be good, but you're not quite ready to get over that hump. And that was very obvious when they didn't go out and like get, you know, some big name. Not that I was advocating for that because I feel like it's just throwing money away eventually when you give all these years of money to a pitcher. But it was very clear what their plan was. Their plan was really not to be a player in that last offseason. And so they are what they are. Dallas Keuchel, is he as bad as he was in the first month of the season? Of course not. Colin McHugh has certainly pitched very well. Doug Fister, I mean, they've got a really good bullpen, but again, not really a closer. So they go into Texas having lost five in a row to the Rangers, I think 10 in a row dating back to last year, and 14 of 15, something like that. And a bullpen by committee. So it doesn't look great for them, but at the same time, they're getting some confidence back. They're starting to have a little bit of fun. And you know, somehow they're going to end up being a very good average team playing like two games over 500 for the season.
Yeah, the advantage I think the American League has this year, one disadvantage is that, you know, right now Boston, it's kind of crazy that Boston's not. Like, it seems like Boston should have the best record in baseball. They have, like, their offense is amazing, and their pitching is coming around. Like, it's weird that they're still kind of struggling with Baltimore a little bit. But the point is it looks like, you know, right now you've got Baltimore nine games over. Toronto's starting to come back around. You know, this does not look like a year where, and maybe it will be, but there's going to be an 83-win team sneaking a wild card game.
No.
So, you know, and so, I mean, Seattle, even with those struggles, they're still six games over. They still look like a really good team. The problem with Houston, that's a big hole to dig out of.
Yes.
Even if they start coming around, because now once, I mean, they're seven games behind Texas. Like, that's a substantial, like, they almost need a sweep. Like, if they win, if they get beat two out of three or even get swept this week, you're looking at 10 back. And that's like Cardinals behind the Cubs link. That is years and miles away.
Well, so, it's a four game series too, Will.
Oh, it's a four game series. Oh, crap. Yeah. So it'd be 11 games. That's even worse, the Cardinals behind the Cubs. So yeah, so it does feel like it's not gonna, like, the thing with Houston last year was they got off this great start and they kind of ran out of gas late. You wonder, the when teams fall behind like that, the thing that usually gets them back is not bats. It's having like regular starters every day, like, settle you down and get back to normal. That's one of the reasons I have a little bit more hope for my Cardinals. Is right now they have up, like, their pitching is not going great right now, but these are talented pitchers and they should come around. And if not, there are guys in the minor leagues ready to come up. Whereas Houston, I don't see a lot of help there.
No, and that's the whole thing is everyone is keeps comparing, not everyone, but like there's a lot of comparisons to like how they started in 2005 at 15 and 30. So it's even worse than what they started this year. And it's like, you know, Pettitte, Clemens, and Oswald, there was always that like threesome that they were going to, you knew where they were going to pitch to. And if they're going to pitch to their level, then they're going to be able to climb. It was such a huge hole to climb. They didn't hit 500 until I think July 8th of 2005. That's how long it took them. And so you have to have that. In order to be able to dig out of a hole, because what happens is it's not like they can't get to 500 and you know, but they can't have another one of those slides. Like you really can't be bad again this season. And it's if you look at like polar opposites, okay, so they started off last year at like 17 and 7 or 18 and 9, whatever that was. Okay, so this year they started off almost completely opposite. So in September last year, they completely collapsed. So if they rise up in September and you know just tear through that month, then you know maybe things can even out. Maybe they can sneak in there. But it's going to be very difficult to do that because I don't believe that the starting rotation will have the endurance and be able to carry them as you get into August and September. I just don't see it. It's a very good rotation. Lance McCullers has a great arm. He's 22 years old. It's so much fun to watch him. Yeah, when you're talking about having to climb out of, you know, to be so many games back in your own division, it's going to be very hard for them.
All right, so we'll obviously be getting to talk about those divisions a lot more as the year goes along. The last thing that we should talk about, and this is something that you and I make, I certainly make no claims to be an expert about. Thank you, Jonathan Mayo. You take care of all of this for me.
Right.
But it is the MLB draft this year. It comes up on Thursday, and it is worth, you know, there's always this talk about like why baseball's trying to make their draft more like the NFL's or the NBA's. I don't think that's frankly a realistic notion, just the way that baseball it works. But it's worth noting that like, 5 years ago, I don't think I even knew when the draft was. I think it would happen like it would happen in the next. You've been working with Major League Baseball a little bit longer than I have, so you know it might have been a lot longer than I have, so it might be a larger part of your daily thing. But like, okay, 7, 8 years ago, the Major League Baseball draft was like, oh yeah, right, that's happening. I'll just wait like 5 years, and they'll tell me whether these guys are any good or not. Now, you know, I'm at least aware of when it is. I'll probably like watch a little bit of it just so I can get a feel for how baseball is sort of constructing the draft and how they're putting together their television. But you know, as an actual physically sitting down and watching the whole thing, I would say it's not, I don't think it's that much of an insult to say that I can't sit down and watch the whole thing, because I can't do that with the NFL draft or the NBA draft either. Certainly not the NFL draft. So I feel like the fact that we're even talking about the Major League Baseball draft as an event and as a thing that's a part of our week, that feels like at least incremental progress, maybe over the last decade.
Yeah, right. When I started covering the Astros for MLB.com, so that was 2001, and starting into like 2002. And forgive me to my higher ups if I'm getting this wrong, but we had like a complete like where you can listen online on MLB.com and listen to the conference call with all the 30 teams announcing every single pick. And I would sit in my office listening, and so that I could like keep track of every player that the Astros were drafting. You know, you want to drive like nails through your eyes after a while because you can't even like focus by like the 29th round. So I have been like so immersed in it. In the last several years, it's been more fascinating in Houston because they've always had like that number one pick or somewhere very high. And so there is some kind of intrigue. But once you get past those first couple rounds, the only people that are excited about it are the people who are picking them because they actually know about these players. It's much more interesting to look back, like you said, 5 years down the road, and see, you know, where guys ended up. And let's, you know, make no mistake about it. The MLB draft, the June draft, of all the players that are drafted every year, about 5% will actually reach the big leagues. If you take with the international signings and all of those, then it becomes 10% of any player that's signed or drafted by baseball makes the major leagues. So most of these guys you're never going to hear from again. But my favorite part is because it's on the network now and because you can see it, and they bring a lot of guys into Secaucus, and I love the representatives from each team, you know, the big names from, you know, the past stars. I do like seeing that. But I love the parents' reactions when their kid gets drafted. So, you know, that's the softie in me. I'm like the one at the Super Bowl doesn't watch the game, and I watch like the anthem and the commercials and the halftime show. So I like watching the mothers start crying when their sons get drafted. That never gets old for me. But as far as like, you know, being really excited about, you know, this kid with these great statistics at his college at shortstop, that does not do much for me.
Yeah, I'm such a sucker for the happy parents.
Oh my
as
God.
A general, and the advantage of the draft that a game, because you know, I also love when they'll send out the sideline interview with the to go up, Jim Hayes is the guy for the Cardinals, where they send up the guy into the stands and they you know, the woman into the stands and they interview them up there, the parents. But the disadvantage of that is there's a possibility that their kid is getting shelled. Right. Or their kid has strike out like four times. Here, the draft is not, because it's always the worst. When first they'll show, hey, we're so excited. Joey's going to pitch today. This is so great. And then they give up like eight in the first inning. And then all of a sudden they cut back to the seats and they're not there anymore. Or like the 11-year-old niece is crying. And it's all sort of a mess. So the nice thing about the draft, there's nothing but positivity. I like that about the draft. All drafts, really, is, you know, there is... There's a happy thing. Everyone, this is a big deal for a lot of these kids. And I still, and you know, we can have a long argument about whether or not the draft slot rules are fair, whether they're good for players or not, so on. But it does take out one of my least favorite parts in the draft with the past, which was, this guy probably isn't going to sign anyway, which always right. like took so much of the fun of it out of it. I do think that's added that kind of level that when someone gets drafted in a certain spot, you're like, okay, I have a pretty good idea of how much they're going to get paid, and we'll see. And they're probably going to sign. I think last year almost everybody signed. May have actually been everyone in the first round signed. It's been, I think the Astros had their issue a couple years ago, but I feel like generally speaking, these guys are signed and they're going to pitch for these teams, and that is a start. You know, that is a good. There's no better way to value the importance of a draft than to have be like, I don't know if this person's gonna go to college, or I don't even know if this person's ever come. You get a sense that these guys are gonna be playing for the teams, and that's at least something to start. And the rest, Jonathan Mayo can explain the rest to me.
Yeah, no, I agree. And you know, I find the things that are the most interesting are the things that you can look back on and realize like how, like, wow, look at that moment and what we were thinking at that moment and look what has transpired since then. So I bring it back to when Brady Aiken was drafted. So we're all in Houston, we're all at Minute Maid Park, we're sitting in the press conference room, we're watching the draft, you know, on TV, and then of course, you know, 4 minutes later, the GM and the scouting director are gonna come in and give their little spiel. And so they pick Brady Aiken, and Brady, you know, he puts his hands over his face and he like kneels, like he sinks down, you know, and you're wondering if he's crying, and his family's like jumping on him, and it's like, it's such a huge moment. And when I look back now and I think what happened since then, it's just, it really makes me so sad, because I just remember thinking like, Brady Aiken needs to go get a college education like immediately, because I saw everything unraveling for him. And so you sort of look at it now and you're like, wow, you know, there's going to be a lot of rough times between now and 6 years from now for a lot of these guys. But it's way more interesting to look back on it than it is to look at it as it's happening.
Yeah, it's also very weird. You know, you see the advertisements for the draft, and of course they've showed the successes. You see Correa, and right. My favorite is when you see Trout. And already, I look at Trout, I'm like, oh, he was so young. And the guy's like 23. And right. I'm still just like, well, he was so young.
Well, look at the little baby face. It's like,
it's actually still a child. All right. Well, I'm sure maybe something amazing will happen about that, and we'll talk about that next week. But mostly, I'm glad to be back on the hunt, back on the trail with you, Ms. Fritter. We are about a month away from the All-Star game. And are you going to be at the All-Star game this year? Do you know?
I have not heard yet. I would hope that this would not be the one that ends my streak, considering it's in San Diego, but I never assume anything.
Yes. Well, hopefully, I have absolute faith that you'll be there. So we'll do a show from there. But we are a month out from the All-Star game. It's starting to get into the nit and the grit here. So I'm excited to keep chatting with you. So thank you, as always, Alice.
Okay, thank you, Will. Talk to you soon.
So thank you, of course. Make sure to check out Allison's work on MLB.com. She's a national correspondent for MLB.com. And, of course, follow her on Twitter at @ALYSONFOOTER. You guys should know that by now, for crying out loud. Anyway, this is the Will Leach Experience Podcast, Footer and Leach Edition. The music is by the Sundogs. Please, as always, rate and review us on iTunes. We'll be back next week with more excitement. Of course, make sure to watch OJ Made in America starting Saturday night, June 11th on ABC. I am not getting this as an advertisement. It's just really good, so you should watch it. Have a great week, everyone. Be safe.